That's right. It's a hankering. It's a hungering. It's time to head on down the old Catfish Highway. But thanks to everybody for listening in. And thanks to Lacey and Elliot for taking care of all of our phone calls out there. Have a wonderful weekend. And be well. And fight the power. Bye-bye.
India has said it will ensure that not a drop of water from the Indus River goes to Pakistan. On Thursday, Delhi suspended a critical water treaty with its neighbour after alleging that Pakistan had links to the deadly gun attack in Indian-administered Kashmir on Tuesday. Islamabad has denied responsibility. Earlier, Pakistan's defence minister, Khawaja Asif, told the BBC suspending the water deal would cross a line.
It will be a declaration of war, you know. You are actually depriving us of water, which is our right, which was acknowledged by India as it is written in that treaty. We want that treaty to stay alive.
The UN's World Food Programme says it's now depleted all its remaining food stocks for families in Gaza. The WFP said its last supplies were handed to Hot Meals kitchens in the territory on Friday. The kitchens will run out of food by the end of the month. Israel has stopped all humanitarian aid from entering Gaza for more than 7 weeks to put pressure on Hamas to release the remaining Israeli hostages. Food prices in the territory have skyrocketed, since the ceasefire ended. The United States and Russia are now closer than ever in their view of the Ukraine conflict, according to a Kremlin aide. Yuri Ushakov was among those attending talks this afternoon between Vladimir Putin and the American envoy Steve Witkoff. He described the talks as productive, as our Europe regional editor Paul Moss reports.
They certainly looked like they were getting on. Footage released by Russia shows a beaming Vladimir Putin as he greeted Steve Witkoff, also bearing a smile. After 3 hours round a table, we're told the US and Russia had drawn closer, not just on the subject of Ukraine, but on what Yuri Ushakov said were a number of international issues. Donald Trump is keen to build business links with Russia, and the head of the country's sovereign wealth fund was among those who took part in Friday's talks. Mr. Ushakov said this productive dialogue would continue.
Brazil's former president, Fernando Collor de Mello, has been arrested after the Supreme Court upheld his sentence of nearly 9 years on corruption and money laundering charges. He is the third former Brazilian leader arrested on corruption charges. Leonardo Rocha reports.
Collor de Mello was convicted of taking bribes to secure contracts between a construction company and a former subsidiary of the Brazilian state oil company Petrobras. The decision to arrest him came from a Supreme Court judge and is expected to be ratified by the other justices next week. Collor de Mello was Brazil's first president after democracy was restored in the late 1980s. He was forced to resign in 1992, halfway through his term, following corruption allegations, but eventually returned to politics as senator for his home state of Alagoas.
World News from the BBC. A court in Wisconsin has held an initial hearing into a judge who the FBI says helped an illegal migrant evade detention. Judge Hannah Dugan is accused of removing the immigration officials who were in the court to arrest the migrant as they did not have a warrant. She also allegedly misdirected the officials away from the suspect. A war monitoring group says 11 civilians from Syria's Alawite minority have been killed in security raids over the last 24 hours. University students are among those who died in what the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said appeared to be sectarian killings. It follows the massacre last month of more than 1,700 people, mostly Alawites, by pro-government forces in Syria's coastal region. An aid agency in Sudan has told the BBC that many people fleeing the paramilitary RSF have died from starvation or thirst in temperatures exceeding 40 degrees Celsius. The Norwegian Refugee Council says the town of Tawila in North Darfur has been overwhelmed by people escaping the violence in the city of El Fasha. Our deputy Africa editor Anne Soy reports.
The stories from El Fasher are horrific. Thousands have been forced to embark on the 25-mile journey under unimaginably difficult conditions, fleeing yet again from attacks. El Fasher is the last city under the army's control in the western region of Darfur. It is thought their rival, the RSF, wants to partition the country. Its leader has already announced a parallel government. The group has lost control over the capital, Khartoum, as fighting rages on past the two-year mark.
A Nigerian tribunal has rejected the US tech company Meta's appeal against a $220 million fine for consumer data violations. The parent company of Facebook and WhatsApp was accused of several offences, including sharing Nigerians' data without authorisation. And that's the latest BBC News.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Just Coffee, Madison's Fair Trade Roasting Cooperative. Just Coffee buys fair trade coffee to ensure equitable conditions for coffee grower cooperatives around the world and roasts locally in small batches. More information at 204-9011 or on the web at justcoffee.coop.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Five Nines, a locally owned cloud service provider of enterprise-level IT infrastructure consulting, hosting, and management services. On the web at 59s.com. Phone number 512-1000.
6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground, another pirate station. We bring the truth to
no place. No change without struggle. No one in power ain't giving up nothing.
WORT 89.9 FM, listener-sponsored community radio, Madison, Wisconsin.
And hello, welcome to A Public Affair. I am STD Noor. You may have heard me saying that today we'll be talking about the Greenpeace trial that ended up with Greenpeace having to pay, I've seen different numbers. One was $669 million, the other one is $667 million, or $600 million. What does it matter, right? Who can pay this kind of fine for supposedly basically running Standing Rock, the protest that we're going there. Everything about it is very strange. Unfortunately, the lawyer from Greenpeace who represented the organization at the trial and who was supposed to join us couldn't do it because apparently the organization is now also being attacked by the Trump administration, and so she was called into meetings and conversations. But we still have with us Cody Hall, who at the time reported to us from Standing Rock. He's one of many people that we talked with. We covered it almost weekly, and we'll be talking with him. Hello, Cody Hall. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
So you sent me your bio. It's somewhat unusual. Let me have you introduce yourself rather than me trying to do it.
Yeah, well, my name's Cody Hall. My Lakota name is Little Buffalo, and I'm an enrolled member from the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe of South Dakota. And the bio itself is, yeah, it is a little bit, I guess, in a way lengthy, but I kind of like to shorten it up, but just that, you know, I'm a father of two, and, you know, I'm an activist. I am a part of my community through and through. And, you know, when I fight for all things that that all of us feel in this current environment and environments before. So, yeah.
So you obviously were at Standing Rock in 2016. For those who maybe don't know what happened there or who need reminders, tell us what happened there.
You know, we fought obviously for the protection of our sacred sites, our origins of land, right? And honoring and trying to have, I guess, the majority of non-Native people, or at that time in North Dakota, to, you know, for people to honor the treaties that were signed with us. And in those treaties, that landmass that for which the pipeline, you know, was coming through, that was a part of our treaty land. So a lot of us fought for, you know, the water and the land, and just to raise awareness of what was happening, you know, to our current state of that time. I mean, we were indigenous people that it felt like we were not being heard and seen. And, you know, by the higher ups, meaning, you know, government people, state of, state officials. And, you know, we had to defend on any level, excuse me, you know.
So it was energy transfer, a big oil company that decided to put a pipeline right there under the water that is the drinking source for many, many people, including, of course, Standing Rock, the tribe of Standing Rock, and it became a massive protest with tens of thousands of people. Who led it?
It was just a lot of indigenous people that led the movement. There was no certain person or organizations. It was just mainly, you know, a lot of indigenous people kind of fed up with, you know, the status quo of, well, we could just run people over, you know, we can run indigenous people over. So, yeah, it was a lot of indigenous people, elders to the youth and everybody in between, that collectively came together and said, hey, enough was enough. So,
yeah. And strangely enough, Energy Transfer decided to sue Greenpeace for supposedly the damages that were done to them. How do you, okay, first of all, how important was Greenpeace there? How involved was it? And secondly, how do you understand their choice, Energy Transfer's choice, to sue them?
Well, you know, honestly, Greenpeace, a lot of us didn't know if, you know, at all that Greenpeace was there. And that's not to throw shade, you know, on Greenpeace. There was a lot of different, you know, organizations, big and small, coming in. A lot of false representation. I've met people that said they were with Greenpeace, but then, you know, really weren't. You know, and for us, you know, for this case, for it to happen, I believe that, you know, ETP, Energy Transfer Partners, obviously wanted to point the finger and the blame. And I believe they were just too chicken to come after indigenous people in itself, let alone hear us. So they had to go off and say, well, Greenpeace is, you know, an organization that fights for, you know, climate justice, raises awareness. It seemed like an easy tie. There was no connection of A, B, and C that ETP could connect, even at that time in 2016, in 2017, and even up to this current case that they, you know, that was involved with all this. They could not make the connection that Greenpeace had anything that, you know, of leadership within that movement. And so I think overall what ETP did was they saw that leading up into this with Trump coming in again, I believe that they wanted to create a different story that that kind of aligned with Project 2025, meaning that if you stand up against any, you know, anybody of this administration and their beliefs, well, then there's consequences. And I think that that's why they really pushed for this narrative that if you see Greenpeace and you stand up for, you know, and stand alongside an organization like this and their beliefs, that we will come after you. And so that's really this kind of strong arm case is what it was of power and authority on their end, just as much as what we amassed back in 2016, you know, of the No DAPL movement. So.
Yeah. So I read that there were only 6 representatives of Greenpeace in the protest there. And that basically what they were working is on teaching people nonviolent resistance. And yet they, again, they chose to go after them. You connected it to the Trump administration. And of course, the trial started before Trump came to power. But interestingly, Kelsey Warren, who is the founder and CEO of Energy Transfer, said that the main purpose of the lawsuit was to, quote, send a message rather than to collect money. He has donated a lot of money to Trump and is apparently quite close to him. Maybe he'll end up in the administration, as many others who have given a lot of money to Trump. So... what about that message?
That message was is false, and I call it false because it had everything to do with that power and authority, but also it had to do with money. When you look at the early on of the federal lawsuit, where they were suing Greenpeace, myself, and a few other people for $1 billion of recovery, meaning they lost stock. They lost stock money. They lost investors. You know, they wanted to go into the fact that machinery was broken and damaged. It everything had to do about money. And then when it got to this level of the state courts, and I believe at first it was listed at $900 million that they wanted to sue for. But obviously, if Kelsey Warren is saying that it has nothing to do with money, I kind of laugh at that because it does. He wants to recoup some of those, you know, what he lost as far as, any stock or anything involved with his company. I mean, granted, you and I, we know kind of how business works, right? If I had a business and something like that happened, It's just that nature in us to say, hey, we're going to recoup. We want to recoup some form of loss. That's what he's doing. But also, he's using his ties and his connection politically to say, hey, if you want to come out and protest and speak against, you know, the real, you know, or speak with the truth, then we are going to come at you with a consequence or consequences. And I believe that that's really more of his power message that he was trying to, I guess, you know, have a, you know, come across, is that if you speak out against, you know, such things, then literally it's like, you know, your freedom of speech, you know, you can speak about things, but they want to shut that down. And you got to look at all this administration right now. It is just, I don't even know what to think anymore. It is really sad that we have come to this now versus what we were. We were a great nation of thinkers, and now, heck, you can sit and say that you know, Kristi Noem looks like a Barbie and everybody has to dress like that now, you know? This is getting ridiculous now.
Most of us can't afford to dress like her, right? $60,000 watch. I don't think I can do that if I ever wanted to. So you mentioned, Cody, that you were one of the people sued originally. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah. They had my name along with a few other people on that federal suit. And then it got dropped to the state suit. In North Dakota, they kept my name on there, which I have no idea why. And then when this case came to trial, they were suing Greenpeace, but they kept my name on there along with Crystal Tubles, and never took our names off. And so that really kind of was like this conundrum of why are you keeping us on, right? And then as kind of time went on, and leading up to the case, I think they were trying to maybe there, from what my understanding was from the lawyers on both sides, Greenpeace and then ETP, was that there was no interest in Crystal. And that's not, you know, saying anything negative in that way. But they wanted to keep my name on there because they thought that they were going to bring me in, which I kind of find is ludicrous, right? I mean, if you're highlighting that you're going after Greenpeace, well, shouldn't you just keep them on the, you know, on the paper? But anyway, they kept us, and I think maybe it was for probably intimidation tactics, and maybe to paint our names, you know, and push through the mud, which was totally unfair. And I think more and more on my end, I can only speak on my end. The ludicrous claim that, you know, that they had on me with the private security company saying that I was the leader of that movement, which I have always said I was never the leader. You know, I just ended up being on all these documents, and then eventually they needed somebody to blame, you know, and I was the front runner of all that, you know, mm-hmm. at that time. And I'm still living in that, you know.
Yeah. Who is Crystal?
Crystal Tubles, she was kind of like the media communication person for Red Warrior Camp uh-huh. at that time.
And that's where you were, right?
And I. And I was only the spokesperson. And throughout all of this, they have tied me to saying that I created Red Warrior, you know, that I started that group, which was false. I never did. That Red Warrior was its own camp, its own resistance camp, before it came to Standing Rock. And so all of these false claims that they had on me, obviously, if you, you know, I did a kind of a tell-all with the journalist leading up to this trial. And, you know, I mentioned that none of this stuff that was ever written about me was ever true, you know. Like I said, since 2016, have always denied the fact that I was a leader of that movement. I just was one of those people that really was just tired of being, you know, told to be the good Indian, you know, and then just, you know, just take it, you know. My ancestors have always, you know, kind of taken that notion of, you know, being forced to be taken, you know, into submission. And that's really where I came from, was just, I'm tired of it. I'm tired of being told what to do and what to say. And at that time of Standing Rock and No Dapple, it was hear us. And that's all it was, you know? So it was really just good words, you know? It's just this, I'm always powered in by certain things that my grandfather have taught me, the books that I've read, you know, of resistance. And it all accumulated up to that point of saying, let's be expressive on this right now during 2016. So,
mm-hmm. Well, my guest is Cody Hall, a Lakota, who was deeply involved in the protest at Standing Rock in 2016. We're talking somewhat about the trial that that ended recently with a ridiculously high fine for Greenpeace. We'll continue talking about that too, but we're talking also about Standing Rock. If you were listening to us in 2016, you heard a lot about that. And you heard a lot from a lot of different people. You're welcome to join us at 608-256-2001 to talk about any of the things we are discussing now. And Cody, like I said, we talked with a lot of people, and they were in the various different camps. And they were very active, and not one of them claimed to be the leader of the movement or of their camp. And it really seemed to me at the time that it was a spontaneous people's uprising against the corporations that feel and behave like they own everything and deserve everything, and that nothing is more important than them making a profit, and never mind how many people it hurts, to what degree it hurts the environment, our Mother Earth, and the water, and so on. So, yeah. But so going back to them deciding to go against Greenpeace, I wonder if I think I very much agree with you. It seems to be a message to all people who are involved in social justice issues, saying you be careful. And we'll get back to freedom of speech here in a moment. But I wonder if you see in it also racism, basically erasing the fact that it was Native Americans who were the leaders, not as individuals, right? But the movement was, you know, started and continued with Native people, but by going against Greenpeace, that seems to be erased. What do you think about that?
You know, I felt that way a little bit. You know, obviously, we have all stated that it was an indigenous-led movement. And it wasn't meant to disregard anybody that showed support. It was literally just, you know, on our homelands that, you know, we were forced to say, hey, you're going to take this pipeline. You're going to drink it. Right. You're going to eat it. And no, we're not. And, you know, for us, that's why we have always said it was just an indigenous led movement. You're right about the feeling of them suing Greenpeace, and I think ETP was in their strategy of stating that this is the way we get to erase that wording indigenous-led movement, that we now get to go against a organization, because you cannot, I don't think they saw it as an impossibility thing to try to sue, you know, the 500 and like 80 plus, you know, indigenous nations that all came to Standing Rock. And I think that that was intimidating for them. That was too much for them to even think about. So they brought it down to say, well, Greenpeace. Well, Greenpeace was there. You know, they talked about it. They shared it in their stories and stuff. So let's go after them, right? That seemed like an easy scapegoat. At that time of No Dapple, there was a lot of what felt like scapegoating going on. I felt like that, you know, personally. It felt like Native and non-Native people and organizations felt like I should take the blame, right, for certain things at that moment. That's what it, you know, that's what it felt like. That's what it was expressed to me at that time and even after. So, you know, yeah, you're right. I think they wanted to lay blame on Greenpeace, so that way they didn't have to face the fact that they have to face indigenous people anymore. So,
yeah, and just to clarify, no DAPL. DAPL stands for Dakota Access Pipeline, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So you mentioned 500 80 plus nations. There were also indigenous peoples from all over the world who came there to show their solidarity, and also the fact that they are facing the very exact same threats. Can you talk about that?
Yes, and that you're correct. We did have other indigenous people from across the world that traveled, that expressed their concerns as well, talked about what they were facing with energy companies, and kind of really helping us have that narrative of defense. And so, yeah, it was just it was a worldwide movement that brought everybody together, whether you were indigenous, to your homelands from wherever, and also allies, non-indigenous people. So that in itself was like a movement, I think, that America needed that they didn't know that they did at that time. Like, afterwards, I think a lot of people said, wow, it was a group of people that were wanting to stand up against corporations, and, that bully tactic, that inserting the, taking land and pretty much air, right? It felt like that by any means necessary or eminent domain on people. And for us to stand up against that, I think empowered other people to say, hey, if they can do it, we can do it, So yeah, there was a lot of plus of that at that time, with a worldwide movement. So,
yeah. And the response included law enforcement and serious repression and people arrested for nothing. I remember that scene of people being sprayed on a very, very cold night, and I imagine a lot of people got sick from that. So let's talk about the collaboration in this case and in a lot of cases between corporations and the police. The police are supposed to serve and protect, right? You, the people who live there. Instead, they were very much a part of what I was talking about earlier. The corporate assumption that they can do anything they want.
They can. And I think where they saw North Dakota now, and I can speak of this from, growing up both in North Dakota and South Dakota, is that those two states are the most racist states in America. Like when black people talk about the South being a racist, kind of region, and then, you get people down there that say, oh, our race relations are way better than it was from the 1950s. You have to roll reverse that and say, hey, we're in 2025, and North Dakota and South Dakota are still in that 1950s era where they do not like people of color. And so when this pipeline was coming through and that corporation saw that they can be buddy-buddy with state governments, they got to use this kind of this authoritarian rule that they can, what's your main, your main group of people that you can see resistance? And it was, Native people. Then they just, proceeded to say, hey, let's just do some, let's speak of literally just let racism exist, right? And so that's where the fuel to fire comes from, is that you got to look at that state. And quite frankly, I have friends that live in both states still that say, yeah, this is, these two states are the most racist states. And as long as you align with those type of feelings, you will get away with pretty much anything from words to literally, physical actions. And so that's why they teamed up with, you know, law enforcement and said, hey, let's, you know, I'm sure there's no doubt in my mind that they had, when they had conversations with law enforcement from Minnesota, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, to say, come and support your fellow law enforcement, you know, enforcement officers, that we got to, you know, we got to tackle these, you know, these damn Indians. And I guarantee you, boom, everybody made a call to that because they still live in that Western philosophy of the old West, you know, the cowboys and Indians. You know, let's say this is an opportunity for us to take them Indians down. And that's really what it felt like. And you can see at that time of 2016 and probably still to this day, you know.
There were cops that were sent from Wisconsin, not from here, from Madison or Dane County, but from other parts of Wisconsin, which was appalling. What business do they have there, and what business do they have, you know, generally speaking, with oppressing people who are basically demanding to be allowed to leave without being killed by means of polluted water, right? And polluted earth and air, like you said. But also that racism that you're talking about, I think, accounts to a large degree to this ridiculously high fine that was meted on Greenpeace, because the trial actually happened there in the very town where many of you were tried at the time. Many were sent to jail and prison. And the jury seems to have been very contaminated with people who are racist, with a bunch of people who identify as Republicans. The judge himself is one of these folks. Can you talk about that? Do you know enough about this?
I do know enough, and it was a sham from the start, meaning that the jury that they made up for this trial, at least 90% of them had ties with the fossil fuel industry, meaning that some of the people that were, that were jurors had a husband or wife working for, you know, oil companies or energy companies. Or like, for instance, so there was one juror that worked for an energy company who they were getting paid by ETP. And so he brought it up in court and said, I didn't know that the company I work for is listed, you know, as one of the people receiving funds from ETP. And the judge said, oh, no problem. You know, hey, we understand, that's fine, you know, and didn't take him off the jury, just kept him on. And so Greenpeace was up against the wall from the start, when they were deliberating and getting this jury set. And then when ETP couldn't connect A to B to C, meaning when they were trying to say that Greenpeace was, kind of the founder of the movement, there was no such basis for that. They literally were fishing and swimming in a deep sea, didn't know how they got there, and literally, you know, probably were crying for help, right? ETP was. And then, you know, just really made a claim that was false, you know, that erased the indigenous-led movement, and then put Greenpeace in there to say, have this organization take the blame. They were at fault for everything. And then on top of it, ETP won defamation suits against Greenpeace because, you know, Greenpeace, along with all of us at the time, were speaking about if there's an oil spill, it contaminates the land, right? It contaminates that land resource as well. And then ETP stated that that was a false claim. And the jury awarded ETP, I think it was in the millions, for I believe that they won three or four defamation suits saying that all that we know, right, that we scientifically, that has been shown and proven to us as people, that if there's an oil spill, there's a huge contamination. But the people in North Dakota believe that that's not such a thing. And this jury believed that and awarded tens of millions of dollars in defamation for what we know is all the truth. You know, that, yeah, when this stuff happens, it's a catastrophic event. And so in itself, I really believe, you know, like I said, that Greenpeace just, they were against the wall from the start, which was sad, you know. And ETP literally was just throwing daggers, throwing their hands, kicking their legs around, just trying to make a big stink about everything. And they did, you know, they got the eye, so.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note in this context that ETP was actually told to stop using the pipeline, but it hasn't. The pipeline is being operated illegally, and there have certainly been some leaks, correct?
Yeah, I believe there's been two pipeline breaks since we spoke about this back in 2016. And of course, you know, ETP just, you know, kind of looks at it like it's nothing, but it is. It's a major thing. We've always, you know, spoken about the real truth. And now we have farmers from up there that have said, hey, my land is worth nothing now. But yet, you know, ETP says, well, hey, we're going to cut you a big old check. And then that way you just kind of, you know, take the money and they don't even say sorry for contaminating your land. They just say, hey, you know, we're going to write you a big check and hopefully you can move somewhere else and live comfortably, you know, with your family and stuff. So that's their way of, you know, putting a Band-Aid on, you know, on a cut that they made. So.
And that, I think, is something that we're seeing again happening now on a bigger scale. The people who hate, for example, indigenous folks, support things like ETP's pipelines. They probably also think that there's some money in it for them, and maybe there is. But they end up hurting from that just as much as the people who have been objecting to it. And we see that now with the Trump administration. What he's doing hurts everyone. Not everyone, not the billionaires, but almost everyone, including the people who voted for them. But... you know, again, they are masters at using things like racism and divide and conquer to get to where they are, where they can hurt everybody. And, you know, who knows? And then talking about having a third term and being a dictator for life and, you know, not even hiding these plans.
You know, it's this current administration that we're having to live in is, I say, scary, right? And then, you know, you're going to have supporters that say that it's not, that they need this. They need this type of rhetoric in their life back. It's stupid because we are all and have been evolving since our birth, right? Our personal births. So... When we see the wrongs, we obviously want to make them right, okay? Make them correct, but we're not having that in this current climate. That this current climate is literally opening up this. It's okay to be a bigot. It's okay to be a racist. It's okay to look at other genders and make fun of them and think that they're less than human. It's okay to back billionaires because they're going to have our back in the end. No, they're not. These people, when you look at his cabinet, why are they wanting to leave the earth and wanting to go to space? But where is that in our history that says that we come from Mars, or, you know, that Mars is going to be the safe place, that we're going to live there forever. You know, I mean, we're still going to die, right? I mean, this, it is hard to insert common sense into the people that support him. And I feel like the way that what they're doing now is to shut everybody up with intimidation tactics. If you speak out against them, then, you know, there's going to be hell coming your way. Well, hey, we had that. I was speaking that narrative back in 2016, and I'll still keep speaking that narrative of, you know, standing up for the, you know, for the right people, for our people, us working class people, you know, us people that come from poverty. There's nothing wrong with saying that that's our background. That's who we are. You know, I wasn't born into a rich fund. I don't know what it's like to be rich. I know what it's like to work your tail off, right, to get things. And I'll always have that. But, you know, the way that we live in now, it's like Kelsey Warren. He gets to go off and speak out against people and make, you know, make them out to be such horrible people, such as myself. And then he gets to, you know, he gets to take in all that defamation money, right? To say that he won defamation suits. Well, I want to sue him and ETP for defamation on me. When you read these court documents, they state that I was a leader of that movement, that I took money from Greenpeace. They said that in the court claim that I took $300,000 as startup money from Greenpeace. Hmm. And then with that money, I bought, you know, guns and ammunition, drugs and alcohol for the camp, you know, literally it's out there. You can read about it online. And yet that goes against me. That's not true. But yet I have employers that look at that and say, wow, geez, Cody, you know, can we hire you? Because it says here that, you know, in a way you're kind of a bad guy. So why is it that somebody like Kelsey Warren gets to, you know, live in that, you know, in that lap of personal luxury that, oh, I get to win. Well, you know what? All right. If you're, you know, my grandfather told me there's two selfishness in this world. There's good and there's a bad selfish. Well, my good selfish is I want to sue ETP for defamation. And I hope that there's some lawyer or some law group out there that stands with me in my fight to say, let's go after these guys. And you know what? I'll take that money and I'll take it and I'll give it to the people. That's what I'm going to do. That's it. Because I'm sick and tired of organizations like this always getting the upper hand. And enough is enough. I've always had that in my gut, that enough is enough with all this. Let's take a stand.
Yeah. And it strikes me that, you know, saying that you took money and you spent it on guns and drugs and alcohol fits so well into the very racist conception of who Indians are.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my guest again is Cody Hall. We are talking about Standing Rock, about the recently concluded trial by Energy Transfer, the big oil corporation behind the Dakota Access Pipeline, their trial or their lawsuit against Greenpeace. We're talking about what's happening now. We have about 11 minutes left if you want to join us at 608-256-2001. You can join us on social media too, at Word Talk, on on that horrible place that the Mars guy owns. There's also Blue Sky, which again, I don't remember that, but Sarah will let me know, and you can join on a public affair on on the social media that's owned by this other despicable billionaire. Cody, you mentioned Mars. I recently read that scientists have just discovered something that apparently was a planet at some point, and it's blowing up in space. And my first thought was that probably Elon Musk's ancestors were there originally, and as they destroyed the planet, they had to come here. And now that they're doing such a good job destroying this beautiful planet, he wants to go to Mars. Before you answer, and you know you don't have to, publicaffair.bsky.social if you want to join us on Blue Sky. Cody, any comment? Am I ridiculous?
No, I don't think it's ridiculous. I think that what we need to do is concentrate on putting Mother Earth back. We need to put the Band-Aids on her and not rely on big corporations to do so in their rhetoric of saying that, you know, they're for a greener planet type of thing. I think it literally comes down to us as people who know, who are, you know, out there breaking our backs to make a change in this world. So we need to, you know, take care of Mother Earth first before we even sit there and say, hey, let's be explorers and let's go elsewhere, right? Let's. You know, my kids are going to be here. So, you know, I know for a fact my kids don't have any plans to say, hey, let's hop and let's go to space. You know, first and foremost, they're thinking here because they live here. You know, that's it. And I think that's all of us. We need to, you know, put a Band-Aid on what we have done to Mother Earth and admit that we have done some bad things, you know.
Yeah.
To be put into that. Into that sector as well, that we just have to admit it. That's okay. We, you know, I know I, you know, thrown some stuff out when I was younger and, you know, I could admit those things. We just need to come together and just say, hey, we've done our part. We, you know, but that's what makes us better as human beings, is that we get to admit our faults and we get to go and say, all right, we'll never let that happen again. Right. That's it.
So let's talk about that, because you say we have to admit, and sure, you did some things before you learned better, and so did I, and probably any of our listeners, but I actually, I'm not willing to take great responsibility, because it's not me who's been destroying the planet. It is the Kelsey Warrens and the Elon Trumps and the Donald Trumps and so on. So the question is, what do we do to get them to stop? And we, again, now we have this administration which seems totally bent on destroying whatever is left that is still good, killing as many people as possible, you know, through taking away things like food from the mouth of children, health, housing, you know, everything that is supportive of human life is being taken away under the title of savings. It's not a saving when you destroy the life of a child who may have grown up to be a genius who, you know, found amazing ways to support the planet's ability to protect us, which is what is being taken away, right? The planet will remain after us if we all go the way of the dinosaurs. So what do we do at this point when we have basically fascism over the land?
You know, that's a great question for everybody involved, because we're all involved in this. One of the things I think of, and that I've kind of used after Standing Rock, was we need to have a seat at the table with the unforsaken groups that we speak out against. Meaning we need to, you know, like literally have a conversation, one of peace, to sit and say, look, we have our indifferences and we will, but we need to make amends. I'm not willing to, you know, go and step way over the line and bring my olive branch, you know, dang near up to 99% of that travel. But we also need to literally just say, what can we do? We are all involved in this. We, meaning we are fighting to raise awareness. We are fighting to protect. But we also see that this group is a we group as well, that is polluting, that is, you know, that is desecrating, you know, our lands and our way of life. And we need to just bridge that gap. And then we need to sit and say, listen, you guys have too much damn money, right, that you're not going to be able to spend in this lifetime. So let's turn around and let's make some change. Hear us. Bring, you know, let's literally have that seat at the table so that we can have these minds come together to help, to say, hey, you know what? You need us as much as probably, you know, at times we need you as well. But that's just my thought. I know people think differently, and some people will probably think that I'm off my rocker for thinking that. But, you know, that's literally, I always think of that physical notion in my head. My grandfather taught me this, and he said, as a warrior, he said, son, there are two things that you bring to people you don't know. One is your pipe, your chinupa, and the other is your war club, meaning that you come at peace with your pipe first, that we have a good conversation, just as much as that kind of illustration I was talking to you about. But also, if they want to get, you know, take things and go a little whirly, then you have your war, you know, your war club to bring that type of, you know, resistance to say, hey, don't go this route, but I can also fight in this realm too, you know? So that's how I kind of navigate, even in today's world, of stating that, you know, I bring these two, not for just show and tell, but I bring these two items because this is literally what encompasses me as a human being, you know? So that's why I say that we all need to come and sit at a table and just talk these things out, air them out. And that's okay. That's that reconciliation part, right? But why is it that we have to be the ones that do most of the reconciliation? It should go both ways. So
and I guess we can hold on to hope that that other side will come to the table. To get back to the trial, this judgment by a very tainted jury and judge is not the end of things. Greenpeace is going to another trial in front of the state, I believe. And if that doesn't change the verdict, they're going to go to the Supreme Court. And of course, we know that that is a tainted court too. But, you know, we'll see what happens. It'll probably take several more years. They are also suing Energy Transfer in Holland for all the damages that this trial has caused. And let me see, just yesterday, I think, or the day before, where is it? Anyway, this organization of legal folks who, some of whom observed the trial, have called on the UN to intervene because, as some of them say, they have never seen a more biased and tainted trial ever. And some of them have been on all kinds of trial in countries where things are, or at least used to be, much worse than here. You have a minute, Cody, to offer your final words to our listeners.
Yes, I hope that Greenpeace does file appeals from this case. And I truly believe that in their appeals, they will win the next steps, because you're right. This was an atrocity to our judicial system and those that believe it so thoroughly. So there's more at stake. There's still a fight. And I encourage those people that feel that in this administration that you might feel intimidated, please don't. Please stand up for what is right and take necessary action to keep that hope alive. That's all I ask for, because right now, the current state that we're living in, people are scared, and there's no reason to be scared. Stand up for your fellow man and woman and your fellow human beings, because
we're out of time. Thank you so much, Cody Hall, a Lakota person who at the time reported to us from the Red Warrior camp in Standing Rock. Appreciate you joining us again. Thank you. Bye-bye. And thanks to Sarah and to Lainey. I'm Esti Dinor. We'll talk again next week. Bye-bye.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. Sugar and spice, I feel nice. Sugar and spice, so nice, so nice. I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel, and with us, as always, the man who will gladly play you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
I will, actually.
You will. I knew it. I can see. I know what's going on over there. It's Dr. Smarty Pants.
Dr. Smarty Pants, thank you so much.
How are you
doing? Dr. of Thinkology.
Dr. X.
Exactly. So